Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, New York Times chief Washington correspondent David Sanger. He asked, is there an emerging Obama doctrine on foreign policy with the withdrawal from Iraq, the victory in Libya, and the deployment of U.S. troops? Did you know that we're sending 100 troops, announced a week or two ago, to Central Africa? So is there an Obama doctrine on use of the military? We'll have the renowned Israeli novelist Amos Oz on today's show later this hour. We'll talk about Senator Chuck Schumer's plan to give visas to foreigners for what? For buying residential real estate in the United States. And we'll look at those new Case-Shiller numbers showing how the housing market declined a little bit more than expected in the time during this summer. Well, the flashiest news last week in terms of foreign policy had to be the death of Muammar Gaddafi. Whatever the circumstances immediately preceding his death, we now know that a NATO airstrike on his convoy helped push the deposed Libyan leader to hide in a sewage pipe. Bing, score one for NATO. The next day, President Obama announced that the remaining 40,000 U.S. troops in Iraq will be home for the holidays. That's a lot of redeployment or undeployment by the end of the year. His political foes have been quick to criticize the announcement, saying he squandered an opportunity and responsibility to end the war what they consider the right way, whatever that is. The previous week, Obama announced that he was deploying 100 special forces to Africa to fight the military group, devilishly named the Lord's Resistance Army. They'll be in Uganda, these Americans, South Sudan, the Central African Republic, and other countries. And in the meantime, Secretary of State Clinton visited Afghanistan and Pakistan and pushed Pakistan to work harder at rooting out the Haqqani network within its borders. Yesterday, Afghan President Hamid Karzai, our best buddy, sent a message to Pakistan in case they get into a war with the United States.
If Pakistan is attacked, Afghanistan will be there with you.
Whose side is he on? Whose war are we fighting over there? All of which leads to a question, is there such a thing as an Obama doctrine? David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times, thinks maybe there is. He also does the Washington Report, as some of you know, every Monday at 8:30 in the morning on our sister station, WQXR. David Sanger, welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be back with you, Brian.
Let's start with Libya. Can we say we won a war?
Well, I don't think we can say that the United States won a war. And the intent of President Obama's effort there, and this gets to the Obama doctrine, was not to have the U.S., of course, in the lead. And this has been a controversial approach. You'll remember that back in March, when the president made the decision to contribute to this effort, he said two things, one of which turned out not to be true and one of which turned out to be completely true. The not true was that he said that NATO would be going in only to protect the population under the UN resolution that had been passed. And in fact, what you saw was NATO pursue the war long after Gaddafi could actually pose much threat to the population. And as you said in the intro, in the end, they ended up bombing Gaddafi's motorcade, which presumably was trying to get him out of the country or at least to another town. And that was the beginning of the end.
Right.
It's hard to make a case that that was designed to protect the population.
Those who are applauding what happened in Libya are comparing it in some way to Iraq. To what extent a 10-year war, which has cost the lives of 4,400 Americans, countless tens or maybe hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, $700 billion, can be compared to this little Libya operation, which put no Americans on the ground? I'm not sure how, but can it?
You know, Libya was the test case for the un-Iraq. This was an effort to make the commitment at the beginning that there would be no American ground troops, not only because of the casualties and not only because of the cost. And this was still an expensive war. We started in March, and it was still, what, $2 billion for the United States. But because this was an effort to demonstrate that a combination of air power and high technology. They sent in the Predator. They considered, but did not in the end, do. They considered a cyber attack to take down the Libyan air force, air defenses. This was an effort to contribute unique American talents and then say to the NATO forces, hey, look, this is in Europe's central interest, but not a strategic vital interest to the United States. There's nothing strategically vital about Libya to the U.S. And I think that's one of the reasons that the president decided to sort of hang back. A lot of people, myself included, did not think that this halfway in strategy would work. And in fact, it took a very long time. And if you talk to members of the NATO forces, they'll tell you they're not eager to go do it again because they ran out of ammunition in fighting an enemy who could barely shoot back.
Huh. Was Libya, in a way, what George W. Bush hoped Iraq would wind up being, the easy toppling of a dictator and then get out and let the people take care of the rest themselves?
In this particular case, President Obama got out by never getting in. And I think that the big lesson of Iraq and of Afghanistan is once you are in, even with a modest number of ground troops, you then own some of the outcome. And the thought here was if the ground troops aren't there, two things happen. First, the Libyans don't feel occupied the way the Iraqis did. And secondly, there's no one turning around saying, what are you going to go do to rebuild the country? Now, in Libya's case, there's plenty of oil money if they can just figure out how to get it out of the ground.
About Afghanistan and Pakistan, what do you make of that Karzai clip? I'm going to play it again. It's just 4 seconds from last Saturday in an interview talking about if Pakistan is ever attacked by the United States.
If Pakistan is attacked, Afghanistan will be there with you.
What is he saying? Aren't the United States fighting on behalf, United States forces fighting on behalf of his government in Afghanistan, but then he would turn his forces on us if we got into something with Pakistan?
Well, first of all, he doesn't have many forces that can turn on the United States. I think you have to take this as almost completely rhetorical and probably designed to try to bridge what's been enormous tension between Pakistan and Afghanistan. But this would not be the first time that we have heard truly bizarre things coming from President Karzai. There were moments last year where you may recall he said that he had every once in a while considered joining his Taliban brothers. And it tells you really more about how precarious his own position inside Afghanistan is, that he recognizes that the United States is leaving by 2014, the surge forces out by next year. And at that by that time, Afghanistan's got to figure out a way to make peace with two different groups. One is the Taliban, and the second is Pakistan. Because if Pakistan feels that India is getting an undue amount of influence within Afghanistan, you could imagine Pakistan either coming in militarily or, again, using its proxies.
All right. And the president is also sending 100 combat-equipped troops to Africa to help try to get the leader of the Lord's Resistance Army, as they're known, Joseph Kony. The mission is to remove him from the battlefield, as the official statement read, dead or alive. Now, Senator John McCain was on CNN's State of the Union on Sunday. He doesn't like this mission. He says, although the situation with the Lord's Resistance Army is despicable, he had reservations about the operation.
One of the most horrible groups ever to inhabit the earth is this Lord's Resistance Army, and I think it's appropriate for us to do what we can to prevent and eradicate them. It's a big part of the world. We don't know any of the details. I remember Somalia. I remember Lebanon. We've got to be very careful about how we engage. Slippery slope thing could happen there.
So even as McCain argues we shouldn't be getting out of Iraq so quickly, he doesn't want us to get in to Central Africa. Why is President Obama sending American forces to Central Africa?
Brian, I think you go back to the same sort of emerging doctrine. It's not a doctrine that anybody in the administration has stated, and this is a doctrine that you intuit by watching what the president does rather than listening to what he says. Again, it's the application of a small amount of intelligence collection and training in an effort to take a fairly ineffective ground force against the Lord's Resistance Army and actually try to turn it into an effective one. Look, with 100 special forces, trainers, there's not a huge amount you can do, and it's not a big enough force to actually get into combat on the ground. But you can do training. Now, Senator McCain's got a good warning here, which is there are slippery slope issues, and he's remembering Vietnam, where he served very famously and very valiantly.
And it started with advisors.
It started with advisors. But the United States has had advisors in a lot of places where the U.S. has not gone on the slippery slope. The most successful example of this is the Philippines, where there was a sometimes al-Qaeda-related, sometimes not, opposition, very violent opposition to the government, where the U.S. has sent in at various times several hundred trainers, and they've actually proved to be pretty effective. And you don't hear very much about it, even though those trainers have been there on and off now, some sort of the middle of the Bush administration.
So what is the situation in Central Africa, if you can give me sort of the 30-second version that led Obama to do it at all?
Well, as Senator McCain said in that clip, Lloyd's army has, you know, started off as a real political resistance, has now turned into basically a gang of thugs, and it's been a pretty horrific human rights set of violations. There are young girls being stolen away. There has been all kind of pillaging going on. And it's pretty destabilizing in an area of the world that, while not strategically vital, though, has a lot of vital natural resources. And I think the president trying to show that the U.S., even though it is wrapped up in many problems at home, still is willing to intervene in key ways that it can without committing lots of ground forces.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times, with us for another couple of minutes talking about how he is kind of inferring an Obama doctrine on foreign policy and use of the military from the various things that the president has been doing lately. And, you know, funny enough, you say that this is not a doctrine that the White House would state or call a doctrine, but you're piecing it together from things the president actually does. But when Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize, he used the opportunity to lay out something that might be called a foreign policy doctrine and a military intervention doctrine and use of force doctrine. So here's 40 seconds of that December 2009 Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech.
More and more, we all confront difficult questions about how to prevent the slaughter of civilians by their own government, or to stop a civil war whose violence and suffering can engulf an entire region. I believe that force can be justified on humanitarian grounds, as it was in the Balkans, or in other places that have been scarred by war. Inaction tears at our conscience and can lead to more costly intervention later. And that's why all responsible nations must embrace the role that militaries with a clear mandate can play to keep the peace.
So, David Sanger, is that what we've seen play out during his administration, something that conforms to those words?
In many places, yes. In a few, no. The president has been very selective. We've discussed Libya, and that was a case where he believed the combination of American technology and a lead taken by NATO could make a difference. We've just discussed what he's trying to do in Central Africa. But in other places where you might imagine the United States has significant vital interests, he's held back because he can't see a way in. And Syria is perhaps the most important example of this, a place where there's clearly as much, if not more, state-sanctioned killing going on than there was in Libya.
And more at stake for the United States.
Far more at stake. And that's where the president's two elements of the president's philosophy begin to tug at each other. On the one hand, in that acceptance speech for the Nobel Prize, he was basically talking about an emerging doctrine of responsibility to protect people against their own governments. But the other thing that you have seen him attempt to do and talk about is keeping the American military interventions to those places where there's a vital American strategic interest. And his argument in Iraq was there wasn't a vital American interest, and there never was. And that was behind the announcement that he was fulfilling the deadline that President Bush himself set of having all American troops out by the end of this year.
Right.
In those places where the U.S. does have a vital interest but can't figure out an effective way in, he's still been stymied. And I think that Syria is perhaps the hardest case in that particular arena.
And as we run out of time, I think we should just add for the record that a lot of people did argue that there was a U.S. national interest in Libya, and that was, if nothing else, having the U.S. be on what is seen as the right side of history in the Arab Spring and doing something when it could do something to help topple the repressive regime.
And, Brian, that was the argument that won the day. You remember that Susan Rice and Secretary Clinton took that position, Susan Rice being the American ambassador to the UN, and the defense secretary at the time, Robert Gates, and Vice President Biden took the position there is no strategic interest, vital strategic interest for the U.S., and the U.S. should stay out.
Chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times, David Sanger. Besides hearing him here from time to time, you can hear him every Monday morning at 8:30 when he does the Washington Report on our sister station, WQXR. David, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
And we'll stay in the Middle East next with the renowned Israeli novelist and nonfiction writer, Amos Oz, voted one of the greatest Israelis of all time by Israelis in a poll. Always named as a finalist for the Nobel Prize for Literature, always very active in promoting a two-state solution. We'll see if he's getting disillusioned. The great Amos Oz coming up next.